Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A trio of unique Thanksgiving TV delicacies get a showcase with you this afternoon. Nat Geo Wild begins Friday night with its newest miniseries, The Three-Part Savage Kingdom. Executive producer Harry Marshall joins me next. Yes, turkey is on top of mind the next day or so, but tonight, CMT invites you to give chicken and their breeders a break. Chicken People follows the action before and at the famed Ohio National Poultry Show. The final story here from director Nicole Haynes later this hour. And on the fiction side, BYU TV turns a Leo Tolstoy short story into Winter Thaw tomorrow night, with John Rhys-Davies as the star. And next hour, we'll hear from producer and co-writer Russ Kendall, writer Joseph Clay, and director Adam Anderegg. Also ahead, IFC's in holiday mode, TV Land throws shade, our classic trivia question of the week, and can we talk about A, lip syncing by Macy's at their Thanksgiving Day parade, and B, CBS doing Thanksgiving parades right? Sure can, and we will. Hello, and happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Block Talk Radio. This just in on this day before the turkey. Tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. Along with everyone at Blog Talk Radio, we wish you, your family, your friends, all involved, a very happy Thanksgiving holiday season. And we welcome you to the program All About Television. Third of three consecutive episodes we've been doing all Thanksgiving week long. Happy you are aboard. 47 degrees, a little warmer than the first 2 days of the week at the top of the hour here in the greater New York metro area. Got some wonderful people coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be involved. How do you do that? Raise your voice and then dial in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe right here on Blog Talk Radio. We also have our chat room in business. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's SimonApple04 by name, and it is just waiting for you. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will get you involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook's timeline feature. Just click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Executive producer Harry Marshall of Savage Kingdom on Nat Geo Wild is live with us from New York after these news notes. Sci-Fi is turning its debut of Incorporated 1 week from tonight into a simulcast. Sister Network USA will play the first episode the same time Sci-Fi does next Wednesday. Incorporated, depicting a two-zone United States, green and red, divided by the consequences of climate change, is the latest television project executive produced by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. The Christmas spirit has finally landed at IFC. Deep co-star Tony Hale will headline a holiday special running on the always-on, slightly-off network December 23rd. The special will take next Wednesday with a live audience at Joe's Pub, the public theater's cabaret space here in New York. And TV Land will launch its first primetime series of 2017, January 17. Throwing Shade is actor from Funny or Die's popular podcast and web attraction, makes funny out of the latest social and pop culture trends. Aaron Gibson and Byron Sunny co-host. Throwing Shade will follow the second season of Teachers on Tuesday night. And that's news notes for today. And now joining us live from here in New York, the executive producer of the new Nat Geo Wild series, Savage Kingdom, premiering this Friday night, Harry Marshall. Harry, it's great to have you with us, and happy pre-Thanksgiving to you.
Well, happy pre-Thanksgiving, Simon. Great to be with you.
This is a very, very big deal, Harry, because Nat Geo Wild is going to also have other Nat Geo channels around the world carry your miniseries. What separates this miniseries from other animal adventures of this kind?
Well, I think, in a word, ambition. We spent 3 years filming this series, and when I say filming, it was 24/7, five crews working around the clock in an area of Botswana called Savuti. So in terms of the sheer ambition, it's got a lot going for it.
What was the aim of this? What are you aiming that Nat Geo Wild viewers get out of this program?
Yeah. So, you know, Nat Geo is an incredible brand, and it is known for its authenticity, its reality, and its credibility. It's a very trustworthy brand. But what we're hoping to bring is a little bit more adventure than you normally get in a natural history film. So there will be all the values that National Geographic bring with that that yellow rectangle that we're all familiar with, but this time perhaps with a bit more drama, a bit more storytelling.
And that seems to be the idea of Further. You know, earlier this month, Nat Geo announced their Further campaign where Nat Geo Channel becomes Nat Geo. That happened with Mars. The Ron Howard, Brian Grazer miniseries that started 2 weeks ago, got rave reviews, by the way, all over the place. And they're really on this kick, not just with their main channel, but with Wild and Nat Geo Mundo, the Spanish language service, to try to put on projects that go beyond, or they like to say further than what you normally do with series like this.
Well, absolutely, yeah. No, it's great to be part of the National Geographic revolution. And for anyone who hasn't seen Mars yet, I urge you to tune in. I mean, what Mars does is it mixes real drama, by which I mean people like Elon Musk, who really do want to put people on Mars, and it mixes very, very beautifully constructed theatrical images of what it might be like. So I think National Geographic is definitely breaking new territory, and we're part of that.
Incidentally, we had the creator executive producer of Mars on this program 3 weeks ago, and you can go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or go to iTunes to catch it. Wonderful show and wonderful production values, starting with what its executive producer, Justin Wilkes, does. You mentioned that it took 3 years to make this miniseries. What led to its creation in the first place?
Well, you know, like all things, perhaps a chance conversation over a glass of wine with some friends and some producers. And we were all fans of the Game of Thrones series, which I'm sure a lot of the listeners have watched. And we thought, why couldn't natural history be as exciting as that? And the world that we were entering was as violent, as ambitious, as cutthroat, as scheming, as Machiavellian as anything that you would watch on Game of Thrones. So we came up with this sort of working title of Big Game of Thrones because we were dealing with the, you know, the big game of Africa. And it was a little hop, skip, and a jump from that to saying, well, why don't we write it in such a way that it has something of that resonance? And so we were lucky enough. I had worked with Charles Dance, a great actor, and he was responsible for creating the character Tywin Lannister, you know, the ultimate baddie of Game of Thrones. And I asked him if he would be happy to do the narration for this, and he said he would, and that kind of set the course for us.
Karen Marshall is the executive producer of Savage Kingdom. It is Nat Geo Wild's new miniseries, and it premieres on that channel this Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, and from there it's carried on Nat Geo channels all over the world. Howie joins me here in New York this half hour on our pre-Thanksgiving Day edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy to have you aboard. We're listening to us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. Simon Applebaum here with you, also live from New York, 47 degrees at the top of the hour, and we invite you to be in the program. All it takes, your voice, and using this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we're back in our normal day and time, and we'll be looking at a brand new Science Channel series that is launching its latest season next Tuesday night. It's called How the Universe Works, and this coming season starts with this premise. What if there's another planet in our solar system, a Planet 9, that nobody knows about? What would this planet be like? We will find out from Stephen Marsh, the creator and executive producer of How the Universe Works, next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Harry, once you decide on this premise, you got Charles Dance involved. When you deal with the forces of Mother Nature, who are not usually prone to writing or directing or following a script, how do you set the story up, and where do you go in Africa to make it happen?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, Simon. I think what you do is you just have to hold your nerves because, in my experience, you know, Mother Nature can come up with some plot lines that you would never have dreamt of. And we just followed the action and we stayed with it, like I said, day and night, and we allowed the stories to unfold. You know, and some of our key characters just came together in the most extraordinary ways. There's a scene in the premiere on Friday where the main lioness, Matsumi, meets our main leopardess, Saba, and she kills one of her cubs. And, you know, we are in a huge area of scrub forest in Africa. What were the chances of our two principal characters meeting and for this, you know, really shocking scene to have happened? But I think you just have to hold your nerve, and if all else fails, tell the truth.
Where did you go to film this?
Well, we were shooting in a place called Savuti, which is in the Kalahari Desert of Botswana. It's an incredible place, and we were there at the right time because Savuti means unpredictable in the local Setswana language, and it refers to a river, the Savuti Channel, and the Savuti Channel flows only 20 years out of 100. It's what they call an ephemeral river. It dries up and nothing happens for 50, 60 years, and then it starts flowing. And when it starts flowing, it makes the desert bloom. Suddenly, you've got this unbelievably lush salad bowl that's attracting every elephant and every zebra and every giraffe. And when you get a lot of prey species like that, well, the prey are not far behind. And so we had the highest concentrations of lions, wild dogs, hyenas, leopards that had all come into this, like, confined area. And it was just the perfect scenario, the perfect storm.
Well, welcome guest 1022 into our chat room. Simon Apple, 04 by name. You have a question or comment for our guest, the one right now, or the one coming up in the next hour plus. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or put your question or feedback into the chat room, and we will take it. Harry, once you get the premise and you're down there with your crews, how do you determine who goes where? Who follows the wild dogs? Who follows the lionesses and the lions? Who follows the tigers and all the other animals?
Well, you know, we were blessed with some absolutely fantastic camera teams. Icon Films produced this series with Brad Bestelink and his company, Natural History Film Unit Botswana. And he had under his charge three or four camera crews at any given time. And they each sort of had their particular favorites. So, for example, Brad was absolutely determined that he was going to track Saba. Saba was the leopard, and leopards are stealthy. They're escape artists. They can wear the cloak of invisibility and just disappear. Whereas his right-hand man, he was much more interested in the sheer brute muscle of lions. And so he followed the lions. And Brad said it was like following a football team because they just left a kind of trail of dust behind them. So you could always find the lions. But the leopards, much more difficult.
In the 3 years that you had to put this all together, Harry, I'm wondering what kind of cameras were used. This is the first nature miniseries we've covered that was shot in ultra-high definition. So if you have a smart TV set,
yeah,
or you have an ultra-high def set, or you use a device like Roku or Chromecast or Apple TV, Amazon Fire, et cetera, chances are you're going to get the ultra-high def, the real ultra HD view. But I'm wondering how a difference that made in what you did. But also, did you have a chance to use drone cameras, GoPro, things like that, that you could micro cameras where you could really get close up?
Yeah, I mean, everything that was filmed was shot in ultra-high definition. Everything was shot in 4K, but a lot of it has been shot in 6K and even in 8K. The cameras being used are the Epics, the Reds, but we have been upgrading, and so at the moment I think we're using something that I've not even seen. Brad Bestelink is, I think, one of the best cameramen working in the world, and Red have chosen to sponsor him. So he gets the very latest cameras, you know, as they come off. So the camera quality is absolutely awesome, but also we have drones, and the drone that we use is an extraordinary contraption. It's an octocopter, It's called a black armored drone, which sounds like something out of Special Ops, and it's an incredible piece of equipment. But the thing is, we're flying very expensive cameras. We're not using GoPros on this. We're using expensive, large, heavy cameras. And so the octocopter has to be completely reliable. And we have lost a few already, which is always very expensive. But we've also been using night vision cameras. We do use GoPros occasionally if necessary. There's a whole kind of range of equipment.
Well, what do people like yourself in the business of doing nature documentaries, nature series, think about all these new camera tools that you have at your disposal, whether it's drones, whether it's GoPro cameras, body cameras, micro cams, steady cams? What have they done in terms of making the experience of photographing these creatures?
Yeah, the advances in technology have been, in my view, nothing but good. When I first began filming natural history, we shot on film. That's not videotape, but on film stock. And even using the very fastest film, I remember by about 5 o'clock in the evening, as the light was beginning to fade, just when the animals were getting up to their business, the camera couldn't work any longer because it was too dark. And you could try with lights and stuff like that, but it really didn't work. Now you can film in almost pitch darkness with infrared cameras and thermal cameras. And the dynamics of an ordinary video camera is extraordinary. And the correction that you can bring in the cutting room, you can ramp up the picture, you can get rid of the noise on images. That's incredible. I think the other thing is that the range with which you can film. We are now working with a piece of kit called a Shotover, which is a gyroscopically stabilized camera mount, and you can have a 1,000-mil lens, and you can be traveling 30 miles an hour in your Land Cruiser across unbelievably bouncy savanna, and the lens is locked on, absolutely solid, and you can be filming an animal from a helicopter. You can be almost a kilometer away, and the animal doesn't know you're there. So not only are you not disturbing the animal, but you are getting incredible images. And we're concerned with both. We want to deliver incredible images, but we don't want to bother the animal. We don't want to bother the animal because it's our business to love natural history, but also we want to get pure behavior.
Savage Kingdom, it's the new miniseries, three-parter from Natural Geographic Wild, and it premieres this Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. The other two episodes come the following 2 weeks at the very same hour, 2 hours apiece. Harry Marshall is the executive producer of the program. He's live with me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy pre-Thanksgiving Day to you and yours from all of us at Blog Talk Radio. Simon Appleman, who is with you live also from New York. If you have a question or a comment for Harry, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, simonapple045. Our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, guest 1022 already in the room. Over the last decade, Wattpad has become a major home for digital storytelling. Check this out. 2.3 million people around the world tell their stories through Wattpad, to the tune of over 300 million over the last decade. And now, Wattpad, to a brand new unit, is trying to invade television. They have deals with TBS, TNT, and earlier this week, Universal Cable Productions, the people behind Mr. Robot. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, my guests will include Aaron Levitt. He is the head of Wattpad Studios, and believe me, he has a very exciting story to tell. Also on the program, where is interactive TV going, and where will it head in 2017 and beyond? Our very good friend, Tracy Swedlow, the founder of the newsletter Interactive TV Today, and the annual TV of Tomorrow shows in New York and Silicon Valley, will make her annual appearance with us. And speaking of TVOT, that will be happening here in New York, 2 weeks from tomorrow, that's on December 8th at the School of Visual Arts Theater here in New York. And I'll be part of that in a very unique role. We'll talk about too. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Wattpad Studios, and Tracy Swedlow of American TV Today, right here on Tomorrow We Tell Live. For you, what was the most unique thing that you filmed that shows up that we'll see in the miniseries?
The most unique thing that we filmed, it's hard to, to even know where to begin. I think that there's some stuff there that's never been filmed before. I think probably the scene that I described briefly where a lioness took the cub from a leopard and killed it. And that happened right in front of us. And these were two characters who we'd been following for months and months. And so it was truly shocking.
Was there anything that you left on the cutting room floor that Natural Wild would say to you right now, Harry, make me a second miniseries, a second set of Savage Kingdom episodes you would like, you would like to put in?
Yeah, I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches, to tell you the truth, Simon. We were struggling to keep everything in. That's the trouble, you see. When you get involved in these stories, they become your children, and you think every scene is wonderful and beautiful. And you need to have the more ruthless over-eye of your executive producers. And we were very blessed at National Geographic with Janet Ham Vissering and Jeff Daniels, who were responsible at their end, and Ashley Hoppen. But I'm sure that there's plenty more where that came from. And indeed, we haven't stopped filming. I mean, as I'm talking to you now, there are still five film crews working in Savuti, working on the next series, following the same stories, following the same characters. I mean, I think when you're onto a very good thing, you know, make hay while the sun shines.
So Savage Kingdom 2 might be not far in coming if you're currently filming.
We're working on it already.
Before we go, what was it like working with Charles Dance? Because you were patterning this on Game of Thrones. You got one of the top actors of that award-winning HBO series, and he's doing the voiceovers for you. What was it like having him aboard?
Well, you know, I followed Charles Dance's career for many years, and I was somewhat in awe of him, and so a little bit nervous. He's got something of a kind of predatory look about him, I think, you know. But he turned out to be just the perfect gentleman. He loved the idea. He immediately said yes. He got it in a heartbeat. And then he became so enthused by what he saw when we were doing the narration. We asked him, we said, well, Charles, would you like to go out and meet the real animals that you have been talking about? And he said, yes, I would. And so he headed out to Botswana with Brad, and he went to meet Matsumi and Sekikama and all the animals. And I think he had the trip of a lifetime.
What you might say is a very big milestone in nature documentaries premieres this Friday on Nat Geo Wild. It is Savage Kingdom. First of three episodes, 2 hours each episode, premieres this Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Check your local list for where Nat Geo Wild is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, here's where you go online, www.natgeowild. That's all one phrase, natgeowild.com. It's www.natgeowild.com. Savage Kingdom begins this Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Like we said, one of the most unusual programs you will find original this Thanksgiving weekend. Harry Marshall, executive producer, thanks for joining us here in New York. Happy Thanksgiving to you and all your crew making this happen, and good luck with the series, and hopefully we'll get that sequel sooner than later.
Thank you so much, Simon.
You're welcome. What a pleasure. Take care. All the greatest.
All the best.
Harry Marshall, executive producer of Savage Kingdom on Nat Geo Wild, joining me here live in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Our classic trivia question of the week coming right shortly, but first, some nice words from the fine people at Audible.com. If you're looking for a terrific Thanksgiving present, you might think about Moana. That's the new Disney animated movie that comes out on Friday. It's got great reviews already. In fact, I saw one from The Village Voice. Love that film. But I got good news for you today. You can get an audiobook of Moana with read by Rena Owen, and you can get it through Audible.com. Here's how. Sign up for a 30-day trial at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, and you can pick up Moana, the audiobook, free and test it out for 30 days. It's one of the over 180,000 titles to choose from through Audible.com. That's why it's a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information. Remember, those titles come in every category, every make and size, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, through Blog Talk Radio. So, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you can get Moana or any free audiobook you like and a one-month trial of audible.com. Remember, because it's from amazon.com, the customer service is out of this world. Absolutely. So give Moana or give something you want for your Thanksgiving holiday season a great, great turn with audible.com. Remember, to sign up for Moana or any other wonderful audiobook on stock among the 180,000 titles to choose from, or that 30-day free trial, remember, here's where you go, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And be in for one great sound experience. And now it's time for our Crack a Trivia Question of the Week. We've been offering it all week long. If you're first with the correct answer and we're still waiting for it, you can win I Was Saved by the Bell by executive producer Peter Engel, and along with that book, another one, Twin Peaks FAQ from the Flawed, covering the classic ABC 1990s mystery series from Mark Frost and David Lynch, as well as the new Showtime remake coming next year. Here's our question. Complete the title of this 1950s TV series starring Charles Bronson, Man with a Blank. Man with a Blank. That's the title we want completed, Man with a Blank. It was a series that ran a year and a half on ABC. It starred Charles Bronson. We can't give you what he did because that would be too much of a hint. So once again, our question this week, complete this title, Man with a Blank. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win I Was Saved by the Bell by Peter Engel, the executive producer of that popular 1990s NBC Saturday morning series, and Twin Peaks FAQ from Applause. How do you do it? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please be sure to include your name and your full mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. You can also use Twitter to get the answer in. Just go to this hashtag, TWBT. That's hashtag on Twitter, TWBT. That Twitter option is made available by our good friends at Hopscotch. We wish them a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday time, including Marty Monaco, the CEO of the company. And if you want to find out more about what Hopscotch does and how you can use them to create your own social soundtrack, go to this website, www.hopscotch.com. www.hopscotch.com. Whether you tweet or email the answer, if you're first, you win. And if you just missed the question, don't worry. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag. If we don't get a winner by the end of the week, we'll keep it going for the following week. And we may add another book prize to it. So, let's see if we get a winner, though, during or before this Thanksgiving. Remember, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or use the Twitter option, that's hashtag TWBT, that's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. And again, if you missed the question, don't worry, I will post it Thanksgiving morning on my Facebook page and at my own Twitter hashtag, at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. However you participate, you got to be in to win. So be in and win. Give yourself a great Thanksgiving treat or for someone you love. And we thank you for that. This is Tomorrow Show Live. We are the program All About the Tube. We're normally with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. This is the third of three Thanksgiving week specials. We've been doing them yesterday and Monday as well, 60 minutes Monday, 90 minutes today and yesterday. And by the way, if you want to catch up on both of those Thanksgiving week episodes, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we also do a Tomorrow Televised video segment every Monday on BK Live here in New York. That is the popular noon hour talk culture variety show about all things Brooklyn and beyond. If you're in New York City, you can catch BK Live from noon to 1 o'clock local time on Brick TV. That's available throughout New York City on Verizon Fios, on Manhattan and Brooklyn through Charter, now Charter Spectrum, as well as in Brooklyn on Cambridge Systems and RCN. And then the segments are posted a day or two later at youtube.com/BrickTV, youtube.com/BrickTV. Check it out. We really do appreciate it. When we come back, I'll have a comment about what is going to happen again at Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade and why it shouldn't happen. Plus, we will have another animal story, this one involving humans, this one right here in the U.S. of A. It's called Chicken People, and it premieres tonight on CNT. The director of that special, Nicole Haynes, joins me live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, right here. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing, with great Thanksgiving weekend programming for you all weekend long. And tonight at 7 o'clock, catch after the lights go out. It's a show that has a lot of soul and a lot of soul in all sorts of ways. Catch after the lights go out tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Get your Thanksgiving weekend off to a fair, wonderful start tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here, Talk Radio. Remember, the best beats are available 24/7, of course, at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvy Televised, second part of our 90-minute edition. We're here until the bottom of the next hour. Happy to have you aboard if you just joined us. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. If you have questions or comments for our guests ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. That's guest 1022 is already in the room. You'll find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Well, our first half hour dealt with an animal story overseas. This half hour deals with an animal story, humans included, right here in the U.S. of A. And it deals specifically with a very unusual event, the Ohio National Poultry Show that happens every year. Some people call it the poultry equivalent of the Westminster Chemical Dog Show at Madison Square Garden here in New York. Well, tonight, CMT is presenting a special at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, leaving off their prime time. It's called Chicken People. And joining us live from Los Angeles, the director of the film, Nicole Haynes. Nicole, happy Thanksgiving to you. We're happy to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
You are very, very welcome. Nicole, tell us what this unique special is all about.
It's a documentary film that looks at the world of exotic show chickens. And I know that, who would know that there was such a world? It's and we begin at the Ohio National Poultry Show following three competitors over the course of the year as they breed and compete their prized fowl.
You know, it's very interesting that CMT, on a weekend that deals a lot with turkeys, and maybe sometimes ham, is kicking off their Thanksgiving schedule with something about chicken, chicken and chicken people. What makes these people do what they're doing? It sounds a little bit like, as I mentioned, the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, but it also sounds a little bit like Lifetime Dance Moms, that these breeders are like really have this incredible urge to breed these chickens.
Yes, indeed. You know, it's, I guess it's one of those questions about why does anyone do an eccentric hobby and what do they get from it? And I think that there's a number of answers and it's different for each person. First of all, the birds are just beautiful to look at. So it's wonderful to see a range of breeds that look like, you know, a snowball come to life compared to a fancy French hat that moves. So there's humor and beauty just in the chickens themselves. And I think each one of our competitors breeds and shows the chickens for very different reasons.
How long does it take to breed these chickens to the point where they can be exhibited at an event like this?
Some people have spent 20 – it's kind of amazing that some people it's a many, many, many year-long – many years to really get to the point where you're continually breeding your chickens so that they meet something called a standard of perfection. There's something called a standard of perfection that is to the chicken world like the Constitution is to the United States. And so they breed their birds to the standard of perfection. And it can take years and years and years to perfect flocks. Some people have actually inherited their flock so that they've had taken it from old-time breeders that might have had that flock for 20 years, and then they've taken it and they continue to perfect it. So it's almost a Sisyphean task of trying to perfect a bird where there's no such thing really as perfection, right? I mean, Simon, are you there?
I'm here. By the way, I want to welcome guest Now I'm here. I want to welcome guest 1043 into our chat room, by the way. Simon Apple 04 by name. You have a question or comment for Nicole, ring it in or use the chat room. And our number again is 646-652-2906. I might add that number is good anywhere to catch us across the country, around the globe, right here on Blog Talk Radio. How do you dive into, actually, I'll tell you what, I think we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tamami Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Nope, I guess not. Okay, call back and we'll get you aboard. How did you get to dive into this world, D-I-V-E?
Oh, got it. I many years ago when my oldest son was 11, there was a fad at his school where this is Santa Monica, a private Santa Monica elementary school, where for some reason the kids were obsessed with chickens. And they would run around going, chicken, 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 and laughing uproariously. And I went and I got him a book called Extraordinary Chickens that was a coffee table book of beautiful portraits of chickens. And I saw a tiny little mention that people breed and compete show birds. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is a world to explore.
I think, Nicole, we do have the call now. Let's see. Hello, you're on Tamami Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yes, hi. This is Ted, and I'm calling from Princeton, New Jersey.
Ted, welcome, and very happy Thanksgiving to you. Go right ahead. You're with Nicole Haynes from Chicken People.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a question about chickens and reproduction. Humans, the way they reproduce?
No. Chickens have vents, and the rooster, it's very quick. There's not a lot of foreplay. It's kind of a wham-bam, thank you, ma'am kind of situation.
But is there, Nicole, a telltale? Ted, by the way, thank you for visiting Jersey for your call. Really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving again to you and family and friends. Is there sort of a telltale sign that these breeders use to say, okay, this chicken is great for me to exhibit at these shows?
Say that again.
Is there a telltale sign or something that they look for, these breeders look for, that determines to them which chickens they should breed for a show like what takes place in Ohio?
Right. There's that book, The Standard of Perfection. And so the book will tell you, for example, that the head should look a certain way, or the chest should have the appearance, or the legs should be long and yellow. And so when they follow, so they breed to that standard, but it's a very long process to learn how to do that. But once they achieve that, the breeders become skilled, and when that bird has those particular characteristics, then they think they have a shot. So it's very, very difficult to win a show like the Ohio National, because often there's anywhere between 6,000 and 10,000 birds that they're competing against, and only one will be best in show.
Nicole Haynes is the director of Chicken People. Chicken People, incidentally, before it goes on CMT tonight, had some screenings at film festivals around the country, including South by Southwest, where it won an award there, and also has had a limited theatrical run around the country. Nicole joins us live from Los Angeles here on Tamami Televised this half hour. Simon Appledown on the other end of the U.S. of A., New York. Happy to have you aboard on this pre-Thanksgiving day. Chicken People, by the way, premieres tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on CMT. You have a question or comment for Nicole? Give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or you have our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, just 1022 and 1043 already aboard. You'll find that chat room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We won't be with you this Friday after Thanksgiving, because we want you to have a fantastic holiday to the fullest. But we will be back next Friday, and when we do, we will have Aaron Levitt. He is the chief executive of Wattpad Studios. It has now become one of the most popular digital places around for storytelling, and they are now getting involved in television through deals with TBS, TNT, and just this week, Universal Cable Productions. What do you want to do on TV? We'll talk to Wattpad's Aaron Levitt. That's coming up next Friday, right here on Tamabi Televised. Also on the program next Friday, we've got our very good friends covering interactive TV, Tracy Swedlow of Interactive TV Today. She is also the founder of the TV of Tomorrow show, taking place every summer in Silicon Valley. And coming up on December 8th, that's a Thursday, 2 weeks from tomorrow, here in New York at the SDA Theater in Midtown Manhattan. And I'll be there covering the show in a very unique role. We'll talk about that too. Tracy Swedlow of Interactive TV Today and Aaron Levitt from Wattpad Studios, right here next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our regular time here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Nicole, how long did it take to put your documentary together?
About 5 years. It was a very long process. First, we pitched it as a reality show, and there was... We were never really able to get it up over the hump. And when CMT came on board, they were the perfect partners for us because they immediately understood the Heartland audience and really nurtured the film to what it is today. They were just fantastic.
Is there a circuit attached to this Ohio footage? I mean, is there a circuit of chicken bread events similar to, let's say, dog shows over the country? We have the Westminster Kennel Club dog show. The National Dog Show is on tomorrow afternoon on NBC. John O'Hurley is the host for. Other dog shows around in Los Angeles and so forth. Is there a similar circuit for this type of activity, or is the Ohio thing like the one and only?
That's a great question. Yes, there is a circuit, and believe it or not, there's several hundred shows every year, chicken shows ranging from small with maybe 50, 60 birds to multiple thousands of birds. And yes, and the breeders, the top breeders will go on, will spend a lot of time on the road every year doing this.
Was it easy or hard to get the trust of this group of people?
It took a little while because I think that Heartland folks, you know, have been, you know, are a little, can be a little suspicious that, you know, city folks are making fun of them. And I think that there's been a record of filmmakers or TV makers kind of poking fun at people with eccentric hobbies. And so it was a process to truly win trust. You know, people are open to a point, but then when they're about to expose their lives, you know, I think they really need to know that you're not going to, that they're not going to expose themselves and then you're going to go in for the kill, which was not my interest at all. You know, I think that I'm a person who thinks that life is hard. I mean, it can be great, but it's hard. And I was really interested in and came to see that chickens really help people to become the best versions of themselves. And I think once I understood, you know, I think that people then became participants in that. I'm sorry, that wasn't very articulate.
No, but you raised that. By the way, we have a phone call coming in. We'll get to that in a second. But it sounds like, in a way, these breeders reflect themselves in what they do to these chickens. In ways of living out a fantasy, in a way?
That's so true. Not only do the chickens reflect themselves, sometimes they look like they're chickens. People... There are breeders who absolutely resemble their chickens, like some people look like their dogs. So true. And I also think that people like themselves, so there's a certain amount of projection onto the chickens.
Chicken reflecting life. It is amazing. By the way, we're welcome guests 1054 into our chat room. If you have a question or comment, call it in or use the chat room. That's at SimonApple04 by name. That's the room, and you'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/toys. Let's take another call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Tim from Boston, Massachusetts.
Jane, welcome. Happy to have you with us from B-Town. And again, happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody you know there.
You too. I have a question for Nicole. Do you have any chickens, and are you interested in getting any?
No, I do not have any chickens. And yes, I live in Venice, and we do not have a lot of land around our house. And when I first went to the Ohio National, I found a chicken that I loved. It kind of looks a little like David Bowie. It's got a big shock of hair coming down into its face, like David Bowie from the Ziggy Stardust days. And I sent a picture of that chicken, me holding that chicken, to my husband, and I got back a few words, and my husband said, "Don't you dare." So it was very clear we were not going to become chicken owners.
Mm-hmm. Jane from Boston, thanks for the call. And again, a very happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and friends. Jane again from Boston, right here on Tomorrow We Tell Lies. Keep the calls coming, 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We really appreciate it. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. Is the process similar to like what horses do in horse racing, where one year they're eligible as three-year-olds for the Kentucky Derby, the Triple Crown, and then the next year the Breeders' Cup? When you enter a chicken into these contests, is the chicken available to use next year, or is it just a one-and-done thing?
The chicken can be used the following year, but oftentimes they're not, because chickens are a little bit like flowers, where they have a point where they kind of, for lack of a better word, bloom. And then after a few weeks, their feathers, you know, start to fade, and they're not as beautiful as they were. So oftentimes, it's a chicken that's born that year that's competed. So sometimes people do bring their chickens back year after year. It really depends how they molt and how they hold up.
What was the most surprising thing, Nicole, that you learned about this whole environment and the people who do chicken breeding for a living?
I guess the first thing is that they're all hobbyists, so that they work so hard for almost no money. So it's really done for love, not money. So that was surprising to me. I think that the second most surprising thing to me was really getting to know one of our key cast members named Shari McCullough, who was willing to talk very freely about some of the troubles in her past. And she had struggled with alcoholism and some abuse in her childhood. And chickens really made her a braver person. And I kind of thought that was amazing on so many levels of, you know, sort of beyond the specifics of the chickens themselves, how her relationship with them really helped her life.
Mm. Did you find, Nicole, that certain areas of the country have more of these chicken breeders doing this kind of activity? And did you find also that there were women and people of color who also were involved in this?
That's such a good question. Really surprisingly, there's very few people of color that breed chickens, and I don't know why, that are in this world. There is sort of a division between men and women, and this is kind of loose. This is not always the case, but there's a lot of women who breed sort of the fluffier, sillier-looking birds, and the men tend to breed, you know, the leghorns, which they pronounce leghorn, and some of the more manly chickens, the less frou-frou chickens. So there was a little bit of a divide among the sexes that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish your thing, and then we'll take the call.
No, I was just going to say, back to African Americans, there's a sort of a famous judge, Heather Hayes, I think I'm saying her name right, who's African American, and I met a handful of competitors, but really it's sort of sadly white, and there are some Latins that have joined, but they're folks who have really sort of given up fighting chickens, you know, cockfighting, and have moved over, taking that skill and moved over into exhibition poultry.
Mm-hmm. And we should point out that these breeders who breed chickens, they are out to dress the chicken up. There's nothing about, you know, cockfighting or trying to harm the chicken in any way.
No, it's all about showing off the beauty of the bird.
Got it. Let's take our next call. Hello, you're on to Marvie Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, good to hear you. Go right ahead.
Hi. I've actually filmed these type of birds before at a farm show, the Pennsylvania Farm Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania before. So they're just amazing to see in person and almost otherworldly. But actually my question is about why don't like farmers breed these type of chickens more for like consumption? Are they just more expensive to raise, and is that the reason why?
That is such a great question, because you're getting at an important point, which is that a lot of these backyard chicken flocks are really heritage chickens, and if anything went wrong with the factory farm chickens, which are very, you know, genetically similar, they're what would save. They're sort of the DNA reserve. They're the safety net. But I can't really speak for the industry. And I know that sometimes some of these chickens, for example, the very chesty ones, like the Cornishes, are of interest to industry people because they all want chickens with bigger breasts. But often there's really not a lot of articulation between people who own backyard or show flocks, and industry people. Does that help answer your question?
Well, a little bit. I guess I'd actually have to speak with some of the farmers as well, because, you know, like growing up, chicken seemed to taste better when I was younger, and I would always hear people say that. I thought it was crazy. And then some people say that chicken tastes better over in Europe, which – growing up also, I thought, that's crazy. Chicken's chicken. But then when I went to a farm show and saw for myself how amazing the varieties of different chickens there are, that there's probably something to it.
Oh, I definitely agree that there's something to it. I mean, in the show world, there's a range of people who either some eat their chickens and others could never kill or eat any chicken that they've ever raised in their home. So there's a broad range of people. But at the time, but in my life, when I've had fresh killed chicken from a backyard farm, I can tell you it tastes way better than factory chicken. You know, than
Yeah, then just the exactly like you're saying, the factory chickens. Well, best wishes for your documentary. I'm definitely checking it out. I saw the little trailer already, and that looks, you know, incredible. So I'm definitely going to check it out. It seems fascinating.
Well, have fun. Enjoy. It's sort of perfect. It's a perfect bird movie for Thanksgiving.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving, Simon.
You too, you and your family and friends as well, Rick. All the greatest. Take care. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Nicole, what's next for you? What's your next TV project?
I'm doing a documentary series right now for a startup cable network called Concord, that's looking at folks who've triumphed over adversity in a variety of ways. And then after that, I want to do my next feature documentary. I'm looking to do a piece on police corruption in Los Angeles, you know, to take a fresh look at the Rampart scandal, to see how it could inform what's happening today with police and minority citizens. Very different, not funny.
Yeah. Concord, you know what startup network is it?
It's called Z Living. So Pop Sugar Studios, which is a top lifestyle millennial website for primarily millennial women, is the production company, and the new cable company is called Z Living. And they have a web presence, but they've moved into television, and so it's for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, these are called Very Living and other names before that, and they changed the name last year to Z Living, and I know they're working a lot with Pop Sugar on a number of different series, some of which are already on the air, and some, like this one, will be on the air, hopefully in 2017. Incidentally, the New York Times calls this movie, Chicken People, a, quote, fun and at times astonishing film, and on your coast, Los Angeles, the LA Times there, poignant and illuminating. You have a lot to say about it if you see Chicken People tonight. 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time kicks off the Thanksgiving schedule for CMT. Check local news for where CMT is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and the network online, here's where you go, CMT.com. That's CMT.com. Nicole Haynes, Director of Chicken People, it's been a delight having you with us. All the very best to you and your family and friends for a wonderful Thanksgiving, and all the very best with more great television and movies down the road.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to be on.
Absolutely. Our pleasure, too. Nicole, all the greatest. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nicole Haynes, Director of Chicken People on CMT tonight, joining us live from Los Angeles. And now the first part of a two-part comment. So 50 million people tomorrow morning will be turning on NBC to watch the annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. It's edition number 90, and it's going to be as great as ever, in some cases better. Hopefully the weather will turn out terrific, maybe a little overcast, maybe a little shower late. But before noon, Santa Claus will be there, and of course there will be the great floats, the great marching bands, wonderful youth groups, terrific celebrities, all sorts of fun stuff, including an hour of the best of New Broadway between 9 and 10. Like I said, the 50 million people are going to be watching NBC's coverage, which has been a perennial. And what they're also going to see is probably one of the worst things to see on television all year, particularly in that 9 to 10 o'clock opening hour, lip syncing. That's right. Believe it or not, in 90 years, Macy's continues to lip-sync the performers and their performances. And it makes you wonder, with all the advances in technology, in audio, in video, where you could blast music from speakers, where you could have microphones, small microphones attached to the face of a performer, why can't you have people performing live? Why do we have to see lip-sync? Especially in ultra-high definition, and for the first time, by the way, the parade is being streamed online, why are we going to see, once again, people lip-syncing performances? It doesn't look good. And if you have a high-definition set or an ultra-HD set, it really won't look good. So I don't blame NBC for this. NBC does a wonderful job. Here's what Macy's ought to do. Macy's, spend some money, get yourself the ultra, you know, state-of-the-art sound system, and next year, do the performances live. L-I-V-E, live. It works better than lip-syncing every time. Believe me, you'll get an even bigger audience. And the Broadway shows, by the way, that you're now showcasing, as well as NBC's annual musical special, Hairspray Live, which is coming in December, they will thank you for it. There is nothing like live performance, particularly live outdoor performance. And if other people can do it live without lip-syncing, so can you. It's time to get into the modern world and Macy's and make your parade even better. You already have a classic parade. Make it more classic. Stop the lip-syncing. You'll be better for it. You really, really will. And once again, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on NBC. Check your local for the NBC station in your area. And by the way, in many markets, NBC will replay the Thanksgiving Day Parade in the afternoon. And for more details, of course, on the parade, NBC.com. And for a complete guide to when the different floats and so forth will be coming down the avenue of Broadway and 34th Street, 6th Avenue 2, go to Macy's.com. Okay? Okay. When we come back, we're going to go live to Utah, and we're going to speak with the folks behind a unique drama special coming to BYU TV tomorrow night. And then in the second part of my two-part comment, while NBC does amazing Thanksgiving Day parade, what does CBS do as alternative? Turns out not much of an alternative, but they used to have an alternative, so why can't they bring it back? We'll talk about that too, and we'll get to all of that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million people around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Anna and Susanna Show, two women with a lot on their minds. Catch them every Wednesday, various times right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best of BDR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. And you can catch our show anytime this Thanksgiving weekend by podcast at iTunes.com and Apple TV 2.0's iTunes podcast app. So download your smartphone or tablet, take us on the go wherever you're going this Thanksgiving holiday weekend, and enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Welcome back to the Mobby Televine, pre-Thanksgiving week edition. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. 47 degrees top of the hour here in New York, the day before the Big Turkey Day. We're delighted to have you aboard Simon Applebaum with you live from New Weather, New York. Great guests coming your way in this half hour ahead of the program All About Television. We're only on Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. And all week long, we've been doing special Thanksgiving week shows yesterday and Monday as well. So if you have a question or comment for our guests ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or get into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And Rick, our friend from Philadelphia, is already in the room. Another Thanksgiving tradition that pops up, one also that is quite human, is the special that runs on Thanksgiving night on BYU TV. That's Brigham Young University's National Television Network. They continue to be the only college university that has a national television service, now available to more than 60 million people on cable and satellite. And this year, the Thanksgiving night special is a dramatic one. It's Winter Thaw. It's based on a classic short story called Mom the Cobbler by the great Russian writer Leo Tolstoy. You could say it's Mr. T's version of A Christmas Carol. The acclaimed actor John Rhys Davies is the star, and we are delighted that joining us this half hour, live from various parts of Utah, are the people involved in making this special happen. First up, live from Elkridge, Utah, co-writer and producer Russ Kendall. Hi, Russ.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And from Salt Lake City, the other writer of this special, Joseph Clay. Joseph, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having us, Simon.
And from Provo, Utah, the director, Adam Enderegg. Adam, happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody.
Thank you, Simon. Happy Thanksgiving.
And Russ, we'll start with you. What led to this special happening tomorrow night?
About a year and a half ago, BYU TV came to Kaleidoscope Pictures and said we'd like to do a holiday show film for holiday 2016 and asked if we had any ideas. A member of our team, Marsh Morford, said, hey, what about Martin the Cobbler? It's a story we had all read over the years and, you know, it's part of our family traditions. And we thought, yeah, that might be a great idea. And we got in touch with Joseph, a fantastic writer, and said, hey, what do you think? And he said, let's take a stab at it. And went from there. And, you know, it's great that BYU TV wants to, you know, create programming that, you know, goes out there and, you know, tries to see that, you know, the good in the world. And they're, you know, put a lot of value in, you know, high value productions and great storytelling. And so we were thrilled to have this opportunity.
Joseph, what makes Tolstoy's story so perfect for this time of year?
Well, I think it hits the universals that we can all kind of understand and that sort of come to the forefront of our thoughts at this time of year as we become perhaps more attuned to the spiritual. As I was thinking about the process behind working on the adaptation of this particular story, I recognized very early on that I knew very little about Russia in the 1800s. But I was able to bring the story of somebody who was aging, who was facing the end of life, who was weighing their beliefs against the realities of what they were facing and saying, you know, does this all fit together in a perfect picture for me? And I was able to draw on experiences with my grandmother and living with her. And that was kind of the way that, you know, just approached it. It was just the universals that Tolstoy is able to tie into as well as anyone who's ever lived.
Adam, how did you get the assignment to direct this?
Well, I am a partner in Kaleidoscope Pictures here in Provo, and was working with Russ. And so we were, you know, BYU TV came to us to ask us to develop the project. And from that point on, we were doing it together. We've done several pictures and TV series in the past, and you know, have a good working relationship, and this grew out of that.
Russ, how did John Rhys Davies, a wonderful actor we've all come to know from so many great performances over the decades, how did he get involved in this?
Yeah, you know, when you go out casting a role, you have a list of people that you think could be wonderful for it. He was on our list. We had a London-based casting director, Jenny Duffy, that we reached out to, and she started putting feelers out and sent the script to John's manager. And as John tells it, his manager called him and had him at Tolstoy. But he too was familiar with the story, had read it in university, and read the script, and it resonated with him. And I think, you know, he's told us there was a lot of parallels in his own life and things where he could really relate to Martin and the journey that Martin goes on in his life.
Parallels like what?
Pardon me?
Parallels like what? Well, what parallels did Rhys Davies see?
His relationships with his own family, with his children in particular. You know, the story, as we've told it, you know, it's an adaptation of Leo Tolstoy's original. We really explore relationships, relationships with God, relationships with Martin's son in particular. And Martin becomes estranged from his son. And so it's a story of, you know, acknowledging those distances and realizing it's not too late to overcome them and reconcile and find hope for a better future than, you know, you may currently have with your those in your life. And, you know, that's what he says really resonated with him.
Mm-hmm. Adam, this is a very unusual production for BYU because it was produced overseas. Before you went overseas to make this, how much pre-production was done? How much organizing do you as a director have to do before you actually set the camera in motion on location?
Well, on this project, we had several weeks of pre-production before we left, and then we had several weeks of pre-production there on the ground in Vilnius. It's an hour-long movie, so it's, you know, it's about half of the amount of time that could be spent on a project like this. But the time that I enjoyed the most in development and pre-production was the time that we were there in Lithuania, because we were working with these amazing craftspeople that were creating, you know, helping us create the look of this movie, which is pretty spectacular, being that it's 1885 Russia in the middle of the winter.
Wichita is BYU TV's Thanksgiving Night Special. It's on tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 5 p.m. on the West Coast. That's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on BYU TV. And we have got the producer and co-writer Russ Kendall, the writer Joseph Clay, and the director Adam Adderay, all with us live here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, who is live from New York, live here with us on this pre-Thanksgiving Day 2016 here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a question or a comment for our guest? We have a call coming in. We will take that shortly. Give us the ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name is Rick Webber from Philadelphia. Still in the room. We're back in our regular time period Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. And coming up on Monday, we've got the creator executive producer of the popular Science Channel series, How the Universe Works, Stephen March. And on the premiere of the latest season, which will be on next Tuesday night, a very controversial subject. Is there another planet in our solar system? Right now, term Planet 9. How suitable is it? How livable is it? Want to know? Find out next Tuesday night, but first find out with us next Monday when executive producer Stephen March of How the Universe Works joins us exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. We've got a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Hello, hello. All right, that person dropped off. We'll try to get the person back on. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you on. Joseph, when you're dealing with a program that is an hour in length, rather than the normal made-for-TV movie length of 90 minutes or 2 hours or more, how do you hone in on the story? How does it, as a writer with Russ, how does it affect your workability in terms of getting the story done?
Yeah, you know, that was a conversation that Russ and Adam and I we had a lot at the beginning is we had a bit of latitude from BYU-TV, and they were interested in us creating something that fit and was appropriate to the material. And so instead of having to try to, like, monkey wrench something into place, we were able to say, what is the story actually? What do we have to do to make it dramatic, to make it resonate with, you know, in a different medium and still remain true to the original story? And we went back and forth quite a bit, and it just came down that an hour was the perfect amount. If, you know, a short story is great for an hour, a novella is great for a feature, and it just fit. We were able to add those additional explorations of relationships with family and reconciliation, parts that don't exist within the original story, and the hour was the perfect length.
Ryan, this is also a very unique production for BYU because there's two film companies involved, your company Kaleidoscope, and there's also Baltic Film, which is overseas. How was the relationship between the two companies?
It was great. I mean, one of the things that's vital to shooting internationally is finding an infrastructure in that country that gives you the comfort and the support to, you know, mount this production and come home with, you know, a project or a film. And, you know, we scouted a number of locations throughout the Baltic area in Russia, Finland, Latvia, and met Gary Tuck, who's the head of Baltic Film Services, and you know, in talking with him and scouting locations and talking about the production, just, you know, just felt that sense of confidence in what he would bring to bear and his team. And they didn't let us down in any way. And they've done a number of wonderful productions. Interesting enough, you know, prior to our filming, they had just completed Tolstoy's War and Peace for the BBC network. And so, you know, they were well steeped in Tolstoy when we got there. But it's been a great working relationship with them, you know, and to create, you know, a snow-swept Russia and, you know, with the authenticity and the textures and authentic buildings and roads, you know, Baltic Films assembled a wonderful group of, you know, the art department and the wardrobe and makeup and just really, really created a wonderful environment for us.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, that version of War and Peace was on A&E earlier this year, got nice reviews and some award nominations in different categories. Adam, how long did it take to shoot Winter Thaw, and what was sort of the top of mind for you in terms of the points you wanted to hit home, the points you wanted to get across to your actors and then ultimately your audience?
Well, that's a great question. The shooting schedule we had was 12 days. We filmed some exteriors that were there in Vilnius in the old town, and then had several days on a converted warehouse that we used as a soundstage. Working with the cast was amazing, and the thing that was top of mind for me was getting performances that were, you know, that would make this a perennial Christmas film. And you know, starting out with John Rhys-Davies, you're taking a good first step. He's such a capable and amazing actor. And then we auditioned and hired local Vilnius theater actors to round out this really interesting, fun cast that's comprised of people that come into Martin the Cobbler's life for just one scene. It's really unusual in that sense because, you know, usually you have a cast and the characters interact from the beginning to the end of the movie. In this movie, Martin goes through these people kind of like a ball in a pinball machine, and they show up and they have this amazing, each of them have amazing scenes with him, and then he moves on to the next one, and they all add up to this amazing Christmas experience that he has.
Did you draw upon A Christmas Carol as sort of either a direct or indirect parallel to what you wanted to do?
Actually, the opposite is true. We saw that there were some parallels in Tolstoy's story and Dickens' story and thought, you know, we need to differentiate ourselves, and made many conscious decisions to make this very specific and distinct in the way that it feels and in I mean, Tolstoy's story is different to begin with, but, you know, there are some parallels. It's an old man, main character, you know, that's disgruntled with his life. And so we made lots of conscious decisions to differentiate it.
Ross, what kind of spirit was there among the cast and crew in Eastern Europe doing this and doing it so close to where Leo Tolstoy wrote the story?
Yeah. As far as the spirit of it, we got the comment a lot from the crew and the cast that, you know, this is unique. You know, in this industry, you work on a lot of different projects. And just the common thing we heard was, wow, this is a wonderful story. And so we kind of went into it with everybody kind of feeling that we are doing something special. And, you know, that certainly helps. You know, there's some long days on set. There were some very cold days, and it was wet. And, you know, you're working 12, 14-hour days. It's nice when, you know, there's a sense of purpose, and it's not just a job. That, you know, just, oh, it's a paycheck. I don't care about, you know, the material. There was a real sense that, you know, people cared about this project and thought it was something of value.
Our trio of guests, you are hearing this half hour, and Bobby Tyler, they're coming away live from different portions of Utah. Joining us live from Elk Ridge is the producer and co-writer, Russ Kendall, the writer, Joseph Clay from Salt Lake City, and the director from Provo, Adam Annenberg. And all of this live on Tomorrow We Tell Lines. We're thrilled with what they worked on. It's based on the Leo Tolstoy short story, Martin the Cobbler. John Rhys Davies, many know him from The Lord of the Rings, from Once Upon a Time, show went way back well. He was fantastic in that show. Many other miniseries and series and movies throughout the decades in television. He is the star. And the premiere is on BYU TV tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's 5 p.m. Pacific time. BYU TV available to more than 60 million people on cable and satellite. And if you have a question or comment for our trio of guests, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, our very good friend Rick Red from Philadelphia, remains in the room. You can find that chat room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. 2 weeks from Friday on the program, we have got the creator executive producer of Hulu's next drama series. It's called Shut Eye. It stars Jeffrey Donovan of Bird Notice fame, Les Bohm, the son of Andre Bohm, one of the key people behind Rawhide. That was the CBS western that Clint Eastwood became a star out of from way back when, the 1960s. Well, Les Bohm, who also did a little thing called Taken, which was the first cable miniseries to win an Emmy Award, specifically for Sci-Fi Channel, he will be with us. Les Bohm of Shut Eye premieres next month on Hulu. He's with us 2 weeks from Friday, right here exclusively on Tomorrow We Tell Lies. Russ, what's the experience like working with BYU TV? It's a network that has more of a rep than it used to when we first covered them several years ago, but it's still a network that a lot of people around the country do not know about. What's it been like working with them?
We've worked with them on a number of projects over the years, TV series, music series, reality television. And the thing, as far as our working relationship is, they've really empowered us to go and do our best work. There's a great level of trust creatively, fiscally, and that's great as artists to be able to go out and know you've got the support to go out and, you know, create something that you can be very proud of. I know, you know, over the years BYU has tried to transition the perception of, you know, their type of programming from, you know, religious, you know, solely religious content to, you know, something that's much more open. You know, their kind of the motto of the company is see the good in the world, and that's everywhere. There's good throughout the world in all, you know, races, religions, and so forth. And so, you know, going out with that in mind to, you know, exemplify the good, that allows you to tell some wonderful stories. And I think they're, you know, they're doing some great things, and we're, you know, appreciative of the relationship.
Joseph, BYU, when it comes to script writing, they've done shows, the Reverend Comedy Series, they've done unscripted shows. We've covered two of them that was produced this year. One was Relative Race through the former ESPN Sports Center anchor Dan Debenham. Another one's called Random Acts of Kindness. And then there's Granite Flax, which is the family-friendly drama that's been on for the last 3 years. They have a new drama series, I understand, a science fiction one, that's coming out next year. We hope to have the folks behind that when that gets done. But Joe, is this the first time you've done work with BYU TV? And if not, how different was doing this dramatic hour opposed to other things you've done?
You know, it was It was the first time that I've worked with BYU-TV. It's been a great relationship. I think that the fact that I was able to partner with Adam and Russ and the relationship that they already had with BYU-TV made it extremely easy for me. I could just kind of sit in the shadows and do my work, which most writers will tell you is the way that they like to exist. And so that was really, really nice. You know, I can say that I may be the only writer in the history of the world who's done work at the same time with Mary Herron and the folks at BYU-TV on two entirely different projects. And that was kind of a fun transition to go from two kind of entirely different projects just to keep my mind limber. But it's been great. It was wonderful from the day one to be able to go in and sit down, and they said, just bring a treatment. And this was coming both from BYU-TV and the folks at Kaleidoscope. So there was just a tremendous amount of trust and that I could just go in and just start working. And it kind of went from there and very, very collaborative. And I think that the project shows it.
Mutual feeling for you, Adam?
Yeah, I felt the same thing. I mean, they're really just an empowering group of people over there as far as filmmakers that they hire to do projects for them. It's probably worth noting, you know, one of the things that they are trying to do, like all television networks are trying to do, is reach more people. And so instead of saying, you know, as has happened in previous experiences in my career where the network executive says, we've got to talk to this group of people and here's how you have to do it, they were more interested in saying, okay, let's just make something that's really fantastic, that's really great, that hits this Christmas holiday special mark and, you know, let it do its work. And so it was really empowering. It was wonderful, actually.
Russ, what's next for Kaleidoscope in 2017? What television projects is your company cooking up?
Yeah, we've got couple feature films in the works, story of an Olympic and world champion, Noelle Pikus Pace, Winter Olympian in the skeleton racing, and we also have a story of three teenage Nazi resistance fighters led by a young man, Helmut Huebner, and his fight against the Nazi regime, and true story. We've got those on the works, and possibly another Christmas show with BYU-TV.
BYU-TV's Thanksgiving Night Special, Winter Thaw, starring the wonderful actor John Rhys-Davies, premieres tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Check your local listings for BYU-TV in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and the network online, here's where you go, www.byutv.org. That's www.byutv.org. TV.org. And BYU TV is available to about 50 million households around the country through cable or satellite. Russ Kendall, producer and co-writer, joining us live from Elk Ridge, Utah. Writer Joseph Clay from Salt Lake City and director Adam Adberg from Provo, Utah. Thank you all, gentlemen, for being with us. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday weekend to you, your family, and your friends. And good luck with the special tomorrow night. I hope it's the beginning of more great things to come with you and BYU TV.
Thank you,
Simon.
Thanks, Simon. Take care.
You are very welcome. Take care, all of you. Enjoy. Our trio of folks from BYU-TV's Winter Thaw are joining us live from various places in Utah. And now our second comment of this pre-Thanksgiving Day edition of our show. Growing up, when I wasn't there at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade here in the Big Apple, I was alternating between coverage of parades on NBC and CBS. While NBC had the Thanksgiving Day Parade's entirety, CBS did something called the All-American Thanksgiving Day Parade, where you had a bit of New York, a bit of Philadelphia parade activity, a bit of Chicago, a bit of Detroit, Toronto activity, as well as Hawaii for a number of years with the parade down there in Honolulu that was hosted by the star of Hawaii 5-0, Jack Lord. Most of the coverage was live, some was taped because the parades happened earlier in the month of November. But here's the thing. In the last decade or so, we haven't had the All-American Parade for CBS. We have had just the Thanksgiving Day Parade, except where NBC does it and they have the Macy's name they can use live from all along the parade ground, especially on Herald Square. CBS does their thing from near their studios in Black Rock, on 6th Avenue and 52nd, 53rd Street. And they just cover the parade as is. Nothing special about it. In fact, it's not even special. The CBS doesn't do much promotion for the parade. They do a press release, but that's it. You don't see promos. You don't see a lot of signs around New York City. Hey, we've got the parade. It's just there. And that's really unfortunate. It's time for CBS to start bringing back that all-American Thanksgiving Day parade feeling back. Hey, there's lots of parades out there that are worth covering. And given satellite technology, you can cover most of them live. Let's bring back Chicago and Detroit and Philadelphia. Let's try new cities like Miami and New Orleans and Houston and L.A. and San Francisco. I'm sure they have parades around the country that are wonderfully done. That would be great for a national audience. In fact, Chicago's Thanksgiving Day parade, sponsored by McDonald's, is going to be covered live in its entirety from 9 a.m. to noon on WJ America. So if they see the value of an alternative parade coverage, well, CBS, how about you? I miss the All-American Day Parade. Bring it back. You can do it. Spend some money. I remember those parades very well. They're always well done, directed by the terrific Emmy-winning talent Byrne Diamond, who also worked for CBS News for so many years. So come on, CBS. Let's get back to that All-American feeling. Really provide an alternative. Rather than do a waste of space, which is basically what your Thanksgiving Day parade coverage is, give us really good stuff before the NFL football. Show us what parades are like all over the country. You will definitely get the audience, particularly if you publicize it. So, come on. Starting next year, let's get the All-American again. What do you say, CBS? Maybe I can, at the CBS press party next month here in New York, I'll ask Les Moonves about it. I'll let you know what he says. Let's see what he does. Come on, CBS. Make it happen. And I'd like to know what you think. What do you think about the lip-syncing at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? What do you think about CBS's color? Do you think they should be All-American again? Love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. I want to thank all of our guests the last 3 days for a wonderful trio of shows, and thank all of you for listening in. We are back at our regular time slot on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. My guest will be the creator executive producer of Science Channel's popular series, How the Universe Works, Stephen Marsh. And then next Friday, we will have Aaron Levine. He is the chief executive of Wattpad Studios. Wattpad, the home of digital storytelling, and they want to break into television big time. They already have deals with TBS, TNT, and now Universal Cable Productions. And our good friend Tracy Swedlow will talk about the world of interactive television from her vantage point as the founder and editor of the popular newsletter and website Interactive TV Today. That's all coming up next Friday, 1 week from this Friday, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Televised. You want to catch up on today's episode if you came in late, or check out our other recent episodes, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version during the Thanksgiving weekend. Obviously, download it to your smartphone or tablet. Take us on your go any place you are going this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Find us at iTunes.com and at Apple TV 2.0, the iTunes podcast app. If you're on Apple TV, get it from an Apple store near you or order it online. Remember, we love hearing from you, so email us, simonapple04@yahoo.com. If they get involved in our country question of the week, you can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. However you communicate, we appreciate it and we respond. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of participants, not through those on Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Amy Mess, or should be Candace Williams. Amy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. All of the Blog Talk Radio wish all of you a very happy Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Be safe and be great out there. Don't drink and drive. And get home safe so you can be with us on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. And one more thing. Take time during this weekend to acknowledge and thank the people in your life. Let them know who you are for them and they are for you. They and you will appreciate it. Make this holiday weekend even greater. Until next time, stay well. And stay tuned.